Guess we'll get started. Okay, so we're on part two of our series regarding determining Jewish status, a very hot contemporary topic with all of the recent incidents that have been reported, one in particular regarding a person who apparently masqueraded as Jewish, and there was a Chabad rabbi who performed the wedding, and it turned out the person wasn't really Jewish. So we started talking about how we determine Jewish status in general, and we got to some of the primary makoros the last time around, and I think Emiel gave me an article, a tshuva, that was just published by the din.org organization, right, that they publish a weekly bulletin, which is called Torah Vehora, and they had a case there about some Arab fellow who suddenly started to put on a yarmulke and tefillin and show up to shul and said, "I'm Jewish, guess what everybody, I'm Jewish." And the question there also became, it wasn't for Chasna's purposes, but my high, that can a person just walk in and suddenly say that they're Jewish? So here too, you have to invoke the principle that if a person always had a chazaka up until a certain point in time that they were not Jewish, then they don't get to suddenly wake up one day and say they're Jewish. What we've really been discussing is a person who didn't have a chazaka in one direction or another. But the question is, how do you, if you never saw the person before, so how do you get to determine? Maybe if you didn't know the person before, then they have the right to declare that they're Jewish, according to at least Rabbeinu Tam, and the shita that we find articulated by Rabbeinu Tam in the various sources that we've quoted up until now in Ksuvas Daf Chof Dalet Amud Aleph, the Ketosis in Pesachim, Daf Gimel Amud Beis, in connection with the story of the Aramean who was eating the Korban Pesach. So we do find such an approach. So one of the sources that's a little bit of a controversial source, but it is worth mentioning, even if I'm going a little bit, you know, out of order from a historical perspective, is the source is Rav Chaim Volozhin, who has in the truth, there were some tshuvas that are published in a sefer called Kuta Meshulosh, some of which were authored by Rav Chaim Volozhin. We know Rav Chaim Volozhin, of course, was the most famous Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, and he wrote a tshuva on this subject, and interestingly enough, the Chazon Ish spends time discussing this specific tshuva of Rav Chaim Volozhin, gives it a lot of careful thought in his own discussions in the topic. Like, for example, you look in the Chazon Ish, in Eben Ezra, Siman Kuf Yud Zayin, he discusses this topic about determining Jewish identity. And Rav Avadya Yosef has to deal with the tshuva of Rav Chaim Volozhin as well in his very comprehensive essay on the subject in Chelek Zayin Siman Aleph of Yibia Omer Chelek Eben Ezer. And he says that this idea of chazaka, we mentioned the two axioms thus far. The first axiom that we said is that Kol mishpachos v'cheskos k'sheiros ein omdos. That's axiom number one. Then axiom number two, we said, is that any person who walks in b'chol makor ika ruba derov abayim lefenenu b'toras yadus yisrael hem. That there's a rov, there's a majority presumption that any person who walks in the room, walks into Beis Din and says, walks into shul and says, "Hey everybody, guess what, I'm Jewish," is presumed to be Jewish, because most people who do that are in fact considered to be Jewish, are in fact genuinely Jewish. So Rav Chaim Volozhin says that it's not that the person just walks in and declares that they're Jewish. When we have this rove, it's a rove that's very contextual. It means most people come in front of us. What does it mean, come in front of us? Most people that come in front of us regularly, they show up to shul every single day, they're going to all of the different shiurim, they're involved in all of the communal activities, they're living, you know, Jewish life in terms of their conduct, so that they've created an impression over time, not merely by opening up their mouth and saying they're Jewish, but in their conduct, the way that they speak, and what that context is going to be may even vary from community to community. But Rav Chaim Volozhin says, for example, they're speaking the lingo. They're speaking the shprach of what would be the Jewish community where they live. So that's when we say that there is a rov. But otherwise, if they don't have that hanhaga, there's something odd, peculiar about them. They don't seem to fit the mold of what we expect in terms of how the Jews usually present themselves. The person looks like they're an Arab who suddenly started putting on a yarmulke and wearing tefillin, so then they wouldn't fit into this category. So it's interesting because in the tshuva that you shared with me, so that's the first argument that they present. We can't view this person as Jewish because even the chazaka that's presented by Rabbeinu Tam, that anybody who walks in and says they're Jewish or they're an eman to be Jewish, that requires a certain hanhaga, a certain presentation. And he quotes the Chutam Meshulosh Simen Hei, quotes from this tshuva of Rav Chaim Volozhin, and right after they quote from the tshuva of Rav Chaim Volozhin, they quote from the Chazon Ish. But the Chazon Ish wasn't really going in lockstep with Rav Chaim Volozhin. The Chazon Ish was saying something a little bit different. The Chazon Ish was quoting Rav Chaim Volozhin, but saying that it's not an absolute principle. Chaim Volozhin said you need to have an hanhaga. So Chazon Ish pointed out that it's not necessarily true. It depends on where the person's coming from. If they're coming from a community, they say they're coming from a community where you know that the Jews aren't that knowledgeable, where, for example, they don't speak, you know, yeshiva shishprach, or they don't speak Yiddish, or they're not so knowledgeable with respect to Shabbos and Kashrus and all of those principles. So even if they don't have the hanhaga, that doesn't take away from the general presumption that a person who walks in and says that they're Jewish are Jewish. Well, what's the test? According to the Chazon Ish is a totally different test. That the Chazon Ish speaks about in Chelek Ebenezer, the Chazon Ish speaks about in Chelek Yoredeya, the Chazon Ish, and I think I have in the materials, I have one of the places where the Chazon Ish speaks about it. There are a lot of materials here. I'm sorry, both places are in Ebenezer. One is late in Ebenezer, one is early in Ebenezer. So I have here, in source Lamin Hei, the Chazon Ish in Ebenezer, Simen Ches Sif Katan Beis. And the truth is, he says something very similar later on in Simen Kuf Yud Zayin. He says that Ha'ikar Tali Be'omid Daitam Shel B'nei Ayir. He says that the way the Chazaka is established anywhere is what is the mindset of the people who are in the community when they view this person. The same way that we have the Gemara in Kiddushin that talks about how Soklin V'sorfin Ala Chazakos, that source Lamed in the materials. I'm looking and I don't see so many people with the source sheets. That's because I guess Rabbi Breslow usually prints out the source sheets and he's not here this evening. It's the same source sheets as last week. I added a couple, but I don't know if we'll get to all the sources anyway. But the Gemara in Kiddushin has this principle, which is also a major theme of some of the writers and some of the psalkim on this subject. There was just a recent psalk from one of the Batei Din Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, the one of my chaverim, shared with me, where there was a person who was presumed to be Jewish, but then there were all of these reyeses, there were all of these question marks that arose about maybe the person who seemed to be their parents weren't really their parents, the parents didn't have any children for something like 14 years, and then this person was born. And it's very interesting, I guess, that if you're a Dayan, so you see a lot and you learn a lot over time. So the first Dayan who wrote about the determination of this person's Jewish status said, there's something suspicious going on over here. I've seen too many cases where if parents don't have a child for 14 years and then they have a child, there's a good chance that it's not their biological child, that the child's really adopted. I thought, well, we all know of miracle children that after parents try for many years to have children, eventually a child is born. We know of Avram and Sarah. I mean, certainly our cases, to cast dispersions on that basis alone seemed to be a stretch. But there were other question marks. There were things that didn't quite compute. There were various statements that were made that weren't consistent with each other and so forth. So it's interesting, two out of the three Dayanim said that they're not so convinced that the person is really can be presumed to be Jewish based on their representation and based on chazakas and so forth. And the other Dayan said that what are you talking about? If there was a chazaka that was established by people knowing about this individual's Jewishness within the community, so we start off with the Gemara in Kiddushin, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Malkin al chazakos, sokin besorpin al chazakos, that if you have a couple that comes to the city and they present themselves as husband and wife, we don't see the chuppah. We didn't have Edom testify about the Kiddushin. But now the woman commits adultery and we have Edom regarding the adultery. Guess what? We do. We put everybody to death. Even though we never collected Edus that they were really married, but there was a chazakah. They were in the city more than 30 days. That there was an impression that people had. They were living as husband and wife, presenting themselves as husband and wife. So therefore, since they established themselves through chazakah as husband and wife, we assume that's the reality, and we would even put people to death based on that presumption, based on the perception of reality that has been created through this chazakah. And the only way to undo the chazakah would be if you had two kosher edim that would testify and demonstrate that these people weren't really married to each other. But if you don't have kosher edim that are able to dispel and undo the chazakah, then the chazakah remains in effect. So the one dissenting dayan in this particular case said, I'm starting in a different direction. I'm starting from the direction which is soklin v'sorfin ala chazakos, that the chazakah has been created, and you can't dispel that chazakah unless you have two edim k'sherim. So the Chazon Ish, getting back to the Chazon Ish says that much of what we speak about when we speak about cheskas Yehudi and a person's nemanus to be Jewish depends upon this idea of chazakah. But says the Chazon Ish that this ain't kolam asin shavin, that chazakah is not exactly always the same, because sometimes people may present themselves as, let's say, husband and wife, but there's already a certain doubt that's in people's minds, because it seems like they're not conducting themselves the way that a husband and wife would normally conduct themselves. It's sort of like an open marriage. There's something peculiar about the way in which they interact. So he says that if you have a situation like that, kigon ish v'isha shebol yir, ze omer zuishti v'zos omer zebali, man says, this is my wife, woman says, this is my husband, but the people of the city say, wait a second, this isn't the way that we typically see married couples comporting themselves. Based on the way that they're comporting themselves, it looks like there's something licentious, there's something promiscuous, there's something illicit about this relationship, and now they're committing adultery. So that does not create a chazakah of eishes ish. And it's only when there is a certainty that people have when they observe this couple that they're really a married couple that we say sokim esorpin ala chazakos. So too, says the Chazon Ish, here in Simen Ches, he's speaking about the chazakah of a married man and a married woman. In Simen Kuf Yud Zayin in Eben Ezer, he speaks about the chazakah of Jewishness. Says it's the same principle. He says it really depends upon what is the perception of a people. Has a chazakah been established by popular communal perception that these people, that this person is, who says that they're Jewish is really Jewish based upon the way the person looks, based upon the way the person presents himself or presents herself, based upon the way the person has been recognized and accepted within the community. So then you have a chazakah. Once you would have that type of level of chazakah, so you would need two edim to dispel the chazakah. But you also have another principle that was mentioned. This I saw in one of the Piskei Din that discusses this subject, and it's a very popular subject, particularly when dealing with immigrants from the Soviet Union, where the Bat Din have to make determinations of Jewishness, where there very often isn't a lot of proof. We've had a couple of cases recently at the CRC where we had individuals who kind of viewed themselves or understood that they were Jewish, but really had no Yadus growing up, didn't have any kind of Jewish identity in terms of their education, in terms of their observance level. They became Baalei Tshuva. Many of these people, they get a bris milah when they're in the late teens, when they're in the early 20s, and then it comes time for them to get married. They they meet a nice Jewish girl, and the Sadek Kedushin says, okay, wonderful, here's my checklist, show me your parents' ksuva. Sorry, no parents' ksuva. Okay, no problem, show me, you know, some kvaros where they're buried in Jewish cemeteries. No, I don't have that either. Show me some sort of edus from people who knew members of your family. Nobody really knew anybody, and suddenly you realize that you don't have any kind of proof whatsoever, and you have to, and very often it results in having to perform a giyur l'chumrah, a conversion for the sake of stringency, for the sake of clarification, so that it be absolutely crystal clear that the person is Jewish. And that could be traumatic for people who have had a Jewish identity, always understood that they were Jewish their entire lives. They have to go through a giyur l'chumrah, but that's why you have a lot of these discussions. What's the degree of proof that you need for these types of cases? So Rabbi Avayu Yosef speaks about this as well in his tshuva in Yabi Omer in Chelek Zayin, and he says that for the people who are coming from Russia, he doesn't think that you have to apply the standard of the Chuta Meshulosh, that you have to apply the standard of Rav Chaim Moser. He says and he quotes from the Kiryas Chana David that follows in this path of the Chuta Meshulosh, that he says that Shafilu Das Poskim Desvilu Shein Choshin Lo, according to those poskim who say that when a person announces that they're Jewish, you trust them. It's only when they've comported themselves as Jews. It's just we don't know where they're coming from. But if we know that the person's not behaving like a Jew, and the person it doesn't even keep any mitzvahs, and they just announce that they're Jewish, leave the kuliyama chayshinenle. So says Rav Avadya Yosef, hine ein dvarav mechwachin. He says, I don't think that this is necessarily true. Shekol sheba makom sheish rabim portsi geder. The person's coming from a place where people didn't keep mitzvahs. Shenaslim keheter l'chal Shabbos ki yotzi b'zeh. And even the people who had Jewish genealogy didn't know to keep Shabbos and so forth. Dinam ketinak shenishba ben akum. They're considered like a tinok shenishba, like I always use the translation of tinok shenishba, Patty Hearst, because that was the tinok shenishba when I was growing up. You know, taken captive. You know, amongst the non-Jews, amongst the hijackers. Like the Chazunisha says as well. So therefore, he says that he doesn't see that as an impediment. And Rav Avadya Yosef goes so far as to say, at least with the Russian immigrants, Behasal kina v'hanaktina shemi ikar adin ha'olim mirusia, as far as the ikar adin is concerned, those people who are immigrating from Russia, matzivim shem yehudim, and they declare that they are Jewish, ne'manimim, no reason not to believe them. As I said, this is why everyone loved Rav Avadya Yosef. He was very embracing of everybody. He just finishes up by saying, this is an important caveat. He doesn't make this as an unqualified statement. It starts out unqualified, but it ends up being qualified at least three different ways. So the first way the Rav Avayi Yosef qualifies this is he says, if there's circumstantial evidence that there's something fishy going on over here, so then you have to investigate further. In the summary that Rav Avayi Yosef provides at the end of the tshuvos, that you always want, like the cliff notes of the Yabi Omer, the wonderful cliff notes. You go to the back of Yabi Omer, you get, you know, a fantastic summary of every single, you know, tshuva that he wrote in just, you know, one paragraph or so. So you can summarize six long pages in one or two short paragraphs. So when the tshuva, the finding, the holding of the tshuva is summarized, so he says over there, he adds a few extra words that he didn't have in the original text of the tshuva, which is that Yisrael says everything has to be according to the judgment of the dayanim who are judging the case in front of them. In other words, he says, here's the basic halachic principle, but how you apply this halachic principle is going to, you know, vary from case to case. It's not necessarily always going to be applied identically. But then he doesn't stop there, because I looked at the tshuva in the Yevi'ah Omer, Chelek Zayin, and the tshuva is not dated. I couldn't find the date of the tshuva. So I don't know if they'll take a look, see when Chelek Zayin, you know, came out, but there's a separate article, the Torah Sheba'al Peh Journal. Torah Sheba'al Peh Journal, of course, is a record of annual conferences that would be held. I don't know if they're still held, but not as far as I know. But they were annual conferences that were held in Eretz Yisrael. They had great, you know, speakers. The top level Talmidei Chachamim postgame would speak about pressing issues of the time. And then afterwards, their various, you know, speeches that they would present at the conferences would be written up in this Torah with the Sheba'al Peh Journal. I mean, we do that now with the annual Dayanus conferences that I very often attend, that are organized by Ravatzon Arusi and the Halichos Am Yisrael organization. They have the big conference. We all make our presentations, then we write them up afterwards, and they're published in a journal. So this is what was done, I think, on a smaller scale. There weren't as many presentations. Ravatzon Arusi has, you know, 3 or 4 days worth of presentations. They're all, you know, published in this volume. So here there were, I think, you know, 7 or 8, you know, major speakers for each of these conferences. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein used to present at these conferences from time to time. Rabbi Norman Lamb presented at these conferences on a couple of occasions. And there were wonderful, wonderful essays that emerged.
The chief rabbis present,
and there were wonderful essays that emerged from these presentations. So in the Torah Sheba'al Peh Journal of Tavshin Nun Aleph, and I promise you, Marshall, after I quote this, that I'll get to you. Okay, so Rav Yosef adds, he has exactly the same tshuva that appears at the beginning of the Chelek Zayin for Yevi'ah Omer in Ebenezer. And then he has this long paragraph afterwards of an additional caveat. This doesn't appear in the Yevi'ah Omer, but it appears in the Torah Sheba'al Peh Journal. So some of the Dayanim in these various cases decided by the Batei Din HaRabanim, they'll quote Ravadi Yosef and they'll quote this coda. So I saw one of the Dayanim quoted this coda and said, oh, this was added in the later editions of Yevi'ah Omer. So I picked up whatever editions, whatever sets of Yevi'ah Omer I could find in people's libraries looking for it, but I couldn't find it. But finally I found it at the end of this article that was published in Tavshin Nun Aleph. Tavshin Nun Aleph is a while ago. That's over 30 years ago in the Torah Sheba'al Peh Journal. Again, when I say 30 years ago, so I'm thinking to myself, 30 years ago, this must have been like 1960. But the truth is, 30 years ago was already, you know, early 1990s. So, you know, a lot of years have passed since I started, you know, since I started out. So Rabbi Yosef says, he says, wait a second, but now things have changed a little bit, because now we have this thing where people don't even know anymore what it means to be Jewish. A person will say they're Jewish, but do they know the definition of the word Jewish? They'll think that you get to be called Jewish even if your father is Jewish and your mother is not Jewish, because of patrilineal descent has become accepted in many circles of Judaism. Certainly in Reform Judaism, patrilineal descent has become the norm, has become in vogue. Kemo HaReformim, he mentions the Reformim. Vani Glorim Achareim, Ibnei Pitzei Amenu. And he says, you think the Reformer alone? Once the Reform did it, so then they opened up a Pandora's box that other people can decide, hey, it's kind of groovy to identify as Jewish, so who knows how else they'll self-define as. You can self-define nowadays as a man, a woman, whatever you want. So why not self-define yourself as Jewish? I'm throwing that in, a little editorial, you know, addition. So, Tzrichem Lakov Lidro Shachami Shematze B'Fenenu Shu Yehudi Yemachene Mo Yehudiya. Because who knows if the mother's really Jewish? And maybe it was already a problem from the maternal grandmother. I said maybe the mother thought she was Jewish, but she only thought she was Jewish because her father was Jewish. So you really have to do investigation, says Rav Avadya Yosef, even according to his very lenient shita. Shehu Yehudi api alocham, you said this, alane pashal torasheh torasenu akadosha, it has to be established through pure foundations. Mibli shiuchal acharkach, now he says something interesting, which may be based on sort of another principle, that he quotes as one of the reasons that we can rely upon a person's presentation that they're Jewish. Listen to this lashon. He says, "Mibli sheyuchal akakak lischamek v'lo mashu iskaven sheyehudi apichok shelumos ha'olam shehochim achara av." What's one of the concerns over here? You're going to catch a person in their lie. This is not such a concern anymore. Or not such a good argument anymore. Because let's say you catch the person in the lie. You say, it turns out you're not really Jewish. So the person has a good excuse. The person doesn't have to be embarrassed or ashamed. The person can simply say, oh, I thought that I'm considered Jewish because my father is Jewish, because my mother's father, was Jewish even though my mother wasn't Jewish. Because now a person, has a good way to wiggle out of their representation. So, Ravadi Yosef, in the course of his tshuva, he quotes the Ritva, Yivamastaf Mem Zayinam and Aleph, who gives as a rationale as to why we would adopt the Rabbeinu Tam principle, that a person is neman to just walk in and say that they're Jewish, because he says it's a milsa davidi legluye, because they can be found out in their lie, and therefore that's one of the principles of nemanus. Sometimes a person has more credibility if they can be found out afterwards. But there, now says, well, why you save an additional argument? He says, now the ritva is no longer as operative as it used to be, because a person can say, oh, I thought, I can make the argument that I'm Jewish, based on this principle, which of course we reject as a matter of halacha. So therefore, we see that even the most lenient shitos now, have become questionable. And even this idea of chazaka is something where you have to recognize that there's such a thing as a chazaka which is based on a tos. That let's say that you have a chazaka where it turns out that a person thought that they were Jewish based on a premise which was 100% faulty. So any time that you have a chazaka b'talos, the mishpatei shol of shol Yisraeli speaks about this. He says that a chazaka doesn't mean anything if it's nisbarer that it was all set up in the first place based on false pretenses. The person moved into town, established themselves as Jewish, and then it turns out that you discover that they established themselves in this particular fashion because they thought they were Jewish since their father was Jewish, so then the chazaka doesn't mean anything anymore. It's like the habdil that we speak about, a person, a woman who's huksuka nida b'shkunosel, that a woman is established that she's a nida, and therefore she becomes prohibited to her husband because she's wearing big day nida. She's going out in front of everybody with big day nida. So the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, Simen Kuf Pehe, says that she can't then say, oh, it's permissible for me to be with my husband because she's already established herself as nida. But if there is a, if there is the argument made that the chazaka was based l'chatchila on a premise where it was clearly known that she was not a nida by herself and by her husband who were establishing the chazaka, she was only wearing big day nida because she wanted to ward off, as the Taz says, she wanted to ward off the ayin hara, and therefore make everybody think that she's not pregnant because she's wearing big day nida, so that even and in fact she was really, pregnant, and that's why, she was wearing the big day nida, so nobody would know that she's pregnant. She could ward off the ayin hara. So once it's, established that the whole chazaka to begin with was only based on conveying a false impression, then it doesn't count as a chazaka anymore, says the Taz, and she would be allowed to be with her husband. So that by the same token, the poskim, such as Rav Shaul Yisraeli, say that in these cases as well, if you determine the whole chazaka was based on a false premise, so then the chazaka doesn't count for anything anymore. So if you go back then to this particular case of the Arab who's wearing the tefillin, that's argument number one, that you need, in order to establish a chazaka, it has to be based on correct, it has to be based on a pretense which is accepted by the community as a legitimate one, that everyone accepted this person for a period of time, for an extended period of time, as Jewish, and that clearly is not the case over here. Secondly, people have mistaken notions of what it means to be Jewish. Thirdly, they have another argument that's presented, which is that Habei Pa'amim Shavi Yaiser Lios Yehudi. Sometimes you get a break by being Jewish. If you're Russian, you want to escape Russia, and you want to be able to be a citizen in Israel and under the law of return and get all kinds of benefits. So it pays to make up that you're Jewish, even if it's not necessarily going to be true. It's not, you don't have the same principle of why in the world would somebody want to claim to be Jewish and be subject to anti-Semitism. It could actually be beneficial to claim that that they're Jewish under these circumstances. And the last principle, or the last argument that they made in this Torah V'Hora newsletter regarding this Shiloh is along the lines of what Rav Avadya Yosef said, which is Misavev in people's minds, Misavev Hamatzios Imadimion Habe Pa'amim. Sometimes people's imagination gets mixed up with reality. People live in sort of a delusional universe, and I think by that it means that people don't always think rationally and logically about what it means to identify as Jewish. Now, as we'll see, this will also have ramifications in other areas, which very much affect lots of families. And that is, you know, in the area we discussed a little bit last time about adoption, sometimes you have families that will adopt, they want to adopt a Jewish baby. They'll go to an adoption agency, and the adoption agency says, well, no problem, the mother was Jewish. So what nemanos does the adoption agency have to say that the child is Jewish? Sometimes there was a tshuva by the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer in Chelek Zayin Simen Mem talks about that if you have an adoption agency, he was talking about a non-Jewish adoption agency, then there's a certain nemanos that halacha gives based on the principle of uman lo maru menase, that if they're under governmental auspices, for example, so they could get into trouble if they lie. And there's a certain emonus the Chassam Sofer speaks about in the context of Aguna cases. If you have like an official court that tells you that a person died, not that they made a determination that the person probably died, but they say, we saw that the person died, and they issue a death certificate on that basis, so they have a certain emonus. That the courts have, the governmental authorities have a certain emonus. So that argument of the Tzitz Eliezer, which was not even Bishaito at the time that he made the argument, was not accepted by everybody, but Moshe Feinstein certainly did not accept that argument. But even from the perspective of the Tzitz Eliezer, I don't know that the argument is quite as compelling nowadays, because when he made the argument, you didn't have large populations of Jews who accepted the definition of patrilineal descent as defining somebody as Jewish. You probably didn't have the same amount of non-Jewish conversions taking place on a wide-scale basis, where just because a person identifies as Jewish, or the adoption, you know, they may say to the adoption agency is not working together with the Beis Din, presumably, when they're recording this information, so it's not quite as reliable. It really is Hainohach. It's the same sort of principles that go into this type of determination. There, you have maybe a little bit of a more attenuated chazaka even to begin with, because at least in the case where the person comes in front of the Beis Din and says, I'm Jewish, they come in front of the shul, so you have what I call, you know, axiom number two of Rabbeinu Tam, that most people who show up, you know, in front of Jewish authorities and say that they're Jewish, they're really Jewish, but the person who's showing up in front of the adoption agency, that's not necessarily the case that Rabbeinu Tam is talking about showing up, you know, in front of the adoption agent, showing up in front of the adoption agency is not equivalent to, you know, showing up in front of a Beis Din. So getting back for a moment to the primary sources of halacha, all of this, I think, just gives us greater insight into how to read the halacha and how to understand how the halacha has developed. Because you look in, again, mentioning the source, Yud Ches, you don't have the sheets in front of you, but if you'll remember, if you're taking notes, so when you look at, if you have it them at home, you could take a look. That's in Shulchan Aruch, Eben Ezer, Simon Beis, Sif Beis. Shulchan Aruch simply says, Kol Mishpachas V'cheskas K'sheiros, U'mot Eliso Mehem L'chatchilo. That's sort of the simple version. All the Mishpachas are V'cheskas K'sheiros. The Beis Shmuel gives you the review of all of the stringent shitos, and the Beis Shmuel is really the major authority that everybody takes issue with, because he takes the hardline stand. And there are Batei Din nowadays who, when they talk about why they do, why our practice is to do so much extensive investigation with respect to a person's Jewishness, they'll say, look at the Beis Shmuel. But our practice, according to Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz Zatzal, was not based on the Beis Shmuel. But I'll read the Beis Shmuel, because we already have a little bit of the background of the Beis Shmuel. But it wouldn't be fair for me to keep Marshall waiting longer.
No,
so.
Okay. No. There's a difference between marrying someone who you might not know and marrying a non-Jew. I know you sit in shul and he has all the shprach, but how it's fascinating to think of how that relationship nurtured and developed when she was obviously with someone who wasn't a Jew. He must have really convinced her. Yeah, I'm bewildered how that went down.
You're talking about the case of the Lebanese man who masqueraded as a firm Jew and he married a Jewish woman. I really don't know. I really don't know. But, you know, sometimes a person might even look a little bit different, but they just say, you know, I'm from Edot HaMizrach, whatever. I have a different complexion. I have a different look. You'd be surprised, Marshall, at how people don't necessarily always have an interest or an inclination to do that much research when they find somebody whom they find to be a soulmate. The Masad Kiddushin are supposed to do more research. And this is one of the issues that we find in general, that sometimes Masad Kiddushin don't necessarily have the training to know the degree of research that they're supposed to do. Also, every single Masad Kiddushin, I tell them, the rabbinic students, you know, when they graduate, when you perform your first couple of weddings, don't rely on yourself alone. Call up your rebbe and make sure that you're covering all bases, make sure that you're asking the right questions, make sure that you have the right checklist, because kol hatchalot kashot, you're going to mess up. You're going to mess up the first couple of times you do anything. You know, even doctors, that's why you have internships and residencies, and you have, you know, senior, you know, doctors who are looking over the junior doctors to make sure that they do things properly. Because you're going to mess up. But the thing is, when you mess up, you want somebody to be standing there to correct you. Look, even anybody can make a mistake, and I certainly don't want to, you know, beat up on anyone, but we've seen cases in the Beis Din over the last number of years where mistakes certainly were made in terms of a lack of research. We're not saying anything, you know, pejorative. As I said, anybody can. You want to watch what you're about to say. I understand. Okay. No, because I seriously, and even in that case, I really don't think that we should beat up whoever the Chabad, but anybody can make a mistake. Really, anybody can make a mistake.
There are two concepts. We started talking about Rov, then we met the Chazakah. I remember Barrow Wine in the 1980s saying that two-thirds, you mentioned another, two-thirds of Russians coming to Israel are not even Jewish. So are we saying that if you don't have a Rov to rely on that they're Jewish, then you look at the Chazakah, see how their behavior is? Or if you don't have a chazaka, let's say they're behaving fine. Or, in other words, then is it either rov or chazaka? If the majority are Jewish from where they're coming from, then you don't need a chazaka. Or if you don't have a rov, then you need a. Are they alternate arguments? Is that what's how?
Well, Rabbeinu Tam in Psachim Daf Gimel Amud Bey says that maybe we don't have a proof from the case of the fellow who claimed to be Jewish in order to eat the Korban Pesach, right, that we follow Chazaka, because maybe there you had a rope, that most of the people were Jewish. So Rabbeinu Tam brings other proofs. The person whose mother was Jewish and father wasn't Jewish, where he was told, go into Gullah somewhere where they won't know you, and just, you know, and somebody will marry you. Whether you didn't necessarily have a row of people who were Jewish in those far-flung communities, but we see that the chazaka was good enough in those particular cases. However, if you have in order to really rely upon the chazaka, that's why the Chazon Ish says it has to be that the community looks at the person's hanhagos, whatever they may be, and says, oh, you know, we have reason to assume that the person is really Jewish. It could be their language, it could be their comportment, but it's not just Stam Azoy, the person starts, you know, behaving like a Jew. It has to be convincing to the local residents that they're Jewish. And therefore, you do look to a certain degree at where a person is coming from, because if they're coming from a place, Rav Asher Weiss writes this. He says that if you're in a place where anybody could be Jewish, and it's just a question of what's the likelihood based on where the person is situated and who their family is, you know, regarding whether they're Jewish or not. So then we could talk about these chazakos. But if a person is coming from a population where the entire population is suspect, says Rav Asher Weiss, none of these chazakos come into play. Because we just know that the chazakas don't mean anything. Like that's why I said a chazaka is based on a faulty premise.
So
believe me, we'll discuss that. I want to discuss the Ethiopian Jews and the Indian Jews and, you know, all of these different populations, because then he says all bets are off. It's not a question of chazaka. There's a problem with the entire population, where you have to answer the question, is this population a Jewish population or is the population not a Jewish population? Rabbi Yoshev writes about this, your issue, regarding the Russian Jews. He writes about it in the Kovetz Tshuva Schele Gal of Simen Kuf Lamed Gimel. And he talks about it in that the context. He says, Ki yadua yesh b'neim be'era kishloshim achuz nesui taruvos. He says that we know that we have 30%. Okay, I don't know if that's a conservative number, but it is certainly, you know, at least 30% of intermarried couples, you know, amongst this group. And he says that here we would apply a different principle, which is the principle that you have not to call mishpachos becheskas kasheros, but you scroll down. You know, nowadays you say scroll down, right? It used to be that you just put turn your eyes down the scroll was kind of like or roll the scroll down was the Gemara's expression, right? But actually, so you just, you know, scroll down a little bit on your computer, and you go from Simon Bay Sif Bay to Simon Bay Sif Hay, and there you have the following halacha. He says, if Evan has a Simon Bay Sif Hay, Nema Mishpacha Shinisar Ba Mamzer. You have a Mishpacha, well, you know there's a Mamzer in the Mishpacha. Not a Suffolk Mamzer, a definite Mamzer. You don't know who's the Mamzer, but you know there's a Mamzer somewhere in this Mishpacha. You know what the halacha is. Called Isha Asur Im Nisei Steitzei. You're not allowed to marry any woman from that mishpacha because you have to worry that maybe this is the mamzer, somebody who comes from the mamzer. And if you did marry a woman from that mishpacha, so then you would have to divorce her. So he says that the same principle would apply. It's not a question of mamzeris, but we know that there are goyim. We know that there are goyim here. So if everybody has the same hanhoga, it's not because it's not coming from any idea that they're Jewish, because they don't know what it means to be Jewish. So therefore, he says, so you would have a problem under those circumstances. So anyway, getting back to the Beis Shmuel, I want to cover the Beis Shmuel. The Beis Shmuel cites those shitos that are machwe. Who did we say was machwe? We said the Rama. The Rama says that this idea called mishpachos becheskas kasheris, we said it's a tautology. If you have a cheskas kasher, so then you're kosher. You don't have a cheskas kasher, then your family's not kosher. So he says, "B'tur kasim sheva ramam mishayim mishpachta yidu alad alo aminin shu becheskas kasher ki chashinin shem ramam zo eved uvet sarak raya liyuksin." You need some sort of a raya liyuksin if you don't have a mishpacha that is known to us as a mishpacha kasher b'Yisrael. Then he quotes the Tosfos and the Rosh and the Ram. Well, of course, we'll call the Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. We only worry about establishing the person as a kohen. And then he brings the two variations of that shita, either in terms of now enabling the person to do a vod in the Beis HaMikdash, which is the one that's the most mistaber, or whether we say in terms of allowing someone to marry a kohen. But we said that really was rejected, because the Gemara said that that was only according to Rabbi Meir. According to the Chachamim, we don't worry about a person's yichus in terms of being allowed to marry a kohen unless there's an error against, you know, the mishpacha. So then he wants to say, yeah, but maybe that Gemara that distinguishes between if there's an error, there's not an error, is only talking about when I have a mishpacha that's becheskas kashrus. But if I have a mishpacha she'ena yidua, a mishpacha that's not a well-known mishpacha, so maybe then we have to be more machmir, even if there is no error against the mishpacha. The Beis Shmuel, he works it out. He works it out very, very nicely. But that's his bottom line. His bottom line is that he thinks you have to be machmir like this particular shita, and he thinks that this is the opinion of the machaber. How in the world is it the opinion of the machaber? The machaber just got through saying kol mishpachos b'chesed k'sheiros. Where does the machaber indicate that he doesn't think that you can trust any old mishpacha, even if it's a mishpacha she'ena yidua, and rely upon that? He says kol mishpachos b'chesed k'sheiros. That sounds pretty sweeping. So he's relying upon the fact that in Siman Gimel of Ebenezer, when the machaber is talking about the halacha of who do we trust to be a valid kohen in terms of giving him truma, so he quotes from a maisa in the Gemara of somebody who is mesiach with bitumo. The person doesn't know what their status is, but they're recalling what happened when they were a child. Now remember, to get truma as a child, you can get truma one of two ways. Either you're a kohen, right? Your father's a kohen, you're a kohen, or you're an eved kohen, right? You're an eved kohen, so that's good for truma, but it's not good for yuchsin, right? If you're an eved kenani. So he says, let's say he's a mesiach with bitumo. I remember when I was a tinek, and I was raised up on my father's shoulders. He took me from school, from yeshiva, on this basis, Rebbe raised him up the kahuna piatzma based on this testimony of what he did when he was a child, so he allowed him to be viewed as a full-fledged kohen, obviously for yuxin purposes as well. So says the Beis Shmua, if you look at the Torah who rejected the shita of the Ramah, and the Torah said everybody is considered to be becheskes kasher. You say you're Jewish, you don't have to come from a mishpacha becheskes kshevin. If it's a mishpacha she'ena yedua, that's good enough, said the Torah. So the Torah didn't have those three words, hotzieni mibeis ha-sefer. And my father took me from the yeshiva. So says the Beis Shmuel, why is the Torah hishmitzos? Lo kasser hotzieni mibeis ha-sefer. He didn't say he took me out of the Beis Sefer. Why is that? Because the Torah accepts the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. So he wasn't worried he's an Eved. But the Shulchan Aruch, who uses this Lashon, he says the Rambam uses this Lashon as well, obviously is following that last week we went over the first Teretz of the Magen Mishnah, the second Teretz of the Magen Mishnah to reconcile contradictions, apparent contradictions within the Rambam. He said the first Teretz is more Machmir, the second Teretz is more like Rabbeinu Tam. So he said that obviously the Shulchan Aruch is following the first Teretz of the Magen Mishnah, namely the Sfirulei Misha Mishpachta Yedua Lanu Chashinat Shem Evedu Mabzeru, that if we don't know the Mishpacha, he happens to be a Mishpacha, but this is not a well established Mishpacha, it's not a Mishpacha Becheskes Kashrus, so then we have to be worried. Either their family is Mamzerim or they're not Jewish. So therefore, that's why the Beis Shmuel reads this into the Mechaber. So you look in the Piskei Tshuva says, what in the world is going on? Nobody reads the Mechaber that way. Certainly we don't read the Rambam that way. And he said that Kosa Shar Melech, who says that we don't accept the interpretation of the Beis Shmuel, Linyan Alok and Yinei Linyan Psule Kaal Das Kol Aposkim Da Filu Misha Eino Cheskas Mishpacha Gon Sheba Meyat Sochoka. Even if a person has no Cheskas Mishpacha Bechlau, forget Mishpacha She'eni Yidua. They come from a foreign land and we don't know who their family is. Bechlau, there's no family. We say all the mishpachos of becheskes k'sheiros. Aye, what about the lashon on she'ein mishpeis ha-sefer? So he says something. The Piskei Tshuva gives an explanation. Siman Gimel Sif Katan Vav, which is very relevant to us nowadays. He says, you know why that person had to say Hosiyeni mishpeis ha-sefer? Because dafka b'toin v'adai dekimle benavshi disol kasheru. Mishamachi, a person is neman ayidei atzmo. It is only in lochashinim neman ayidei atzmo. Only if a person knows for sure what it means to be Jewish do they have nemanus. This person who's telling the story, he doesn't know what he is. He doesn't know if he's a kohen or not a kohen. He's telling a story. This is what happened. I happened to eat truma when I was younger. I was taken out of the Beis Sefer. You tell me what I am. He doesn't know that he's a kohen. So then we require the person to give us more compelling evidence for us to draw that conclusion, because the person doesn't know the conclusion themselves. He doesn't know if he's an Eved or if he's a Kohen. He doesn't know himself. So he's telling us what happened when he was a child so we can figure it out for him. So that's why we need all the information. He's just telling us what happened when he was a youngster. So then for sure, he's not making a self-representation that he's a valid Jew. He doesn't know if he's a Jew or if he's an Eved Kenani. So therefore, we need fuller information. So this really ties in with the last comment, or the last caveat, that Rabbi Avadya Yosef built into his presentation, which is that people nowadays don't necessarily know what it means when they're declaring that they're a Jew. They don't know what the criteria are to be a Jew. So therefore, the burden of evidence becomes stronger according to everybody. Even if you don't know like the Beis Shmuel, the burden of evidence becomes stronger. And this may explain the practice, which is quoted by the Be'er Heitev in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. Most of the time, the Be'er Heitev is only quoting what the other Nosei Kelim say. So you look at the Be'er Heitev. The Be'er Heitev is our cliff notes for, you don't want to read the entire Beis Shmuel, Chelkos Mechokek, so you read the Be'er. In your day, you don't want to read the entire Shachar Tais. That could take a long time in your day to go through the Shachar Tais. Be'er Heitev is a Machayah. The Be'er Heitev, you know, he tells you everything you need to know, just a few terse, succinct lines are wonderful. But sometimes the Be'er Heitev adds something else. He'll add something of his own. This is such a case. He says, okay, we know the Ramah was a big machmir about this, but he says, you know who else said this? He says, another parish, another commentary, the name of the Beis Hillel. The Chen Kasuv Beis Hillel. Misha ba mi eretz acheres, person comes from another land, hein isho isho abocho abesulu amano mono, whatever they are, the older man, younger man, teenager, widow, widower, sarak or ayashu Yisrael, has to bring a proof that they're Yisrael. V'ashim isnagim kadas Yisrael. And you'll say, oh, but maybe if they have a good chazakah, and the chazakah will be that they're acting like a Jew, they meet Rav Chaim Volozhiner's, you know, criteria, whatever it is, and they know everything about the Jewish community, they're able to, you know, play Jewish geography, whatever else, apa pikein tzrik and raya. Nonetheless, they need a raya. And he says, this is a takana. It's an old Lithuanian Medinas Lita. They made this takana. They made a takana. Not necessarily based on accepting the first teretz of the Magi Mishnah as opposed to the second teretz of the Magi Mishnah. Of accepting Rashi as opposed to Rabbeinu Tam. Of accepting the Beis Shmuel as opposed to the Torah. No. But simply, this was a takana. She'ein l'sader. She would call it a mala asu b'yuxin. She'ein l'sader. Meshum kiddushin eliyim kain sheyesh lo raya sheyisrael meezem mishpacha. It's the takana. What is the takana based upon? You could say the takana is based upon all of these different factors and considerations. Maybe a person has an advantage for claiming that they're Jewish. They want to marry, you know, a Jewish significant other without having to, you know, go through a conversion process. Maybe a person doesn't really have a good idea, a good sense of what it means, you know, to be Jewish altogether. And maybe we have to be worried that the chazakas today don't mean what the chazakas may have meant, you know, once upon a time. So I mentioned, I think briefly, I'll finish with this, you know, for this time. And then there's, Baruch Hashem, a lot more to discuss. We'll go into adoptions, kind of, you know, whet your appetite a little bit, I hope, you know, regarding, because we get a lot of the shilos, and a lot of the poskim deal, you know, with the shilos of how do you really establish, you know, Jewishness in adoption cases. The Aruch HaShulchan really says there are three gradations, and you can disagree with the Aruch HaShulchan. Rabbi Avadya Yosef certainly disagrees with the Aruch HaShulchan. But he says that if you look closely at the sources, you can certainly divide it into three different categories. The first is the Shita, the Ramah, who says that kol mishpachas b'cheslas k'sheres means only when they have a cheslas kashrus. The second Shita, he says, is really what he claims to be the Shita of the Ramah, which is that all mishpachas of a cheslas k'sheres, as long as I have an actual mishpacha. As long as I have an actual mishpacha. But when is it that you have to prove Jewishness? And he attributes this to Rashi. He says that the chazak is the mishpacha. Aval isha ba mimirchak. But this is the case that the Beis Hillel seems to talk about. A person who comes to, and there's, it's not a question whether the mishpacha has a cheses kashus or not. They're coming untethered from any kind of a mishpacha. They're not attached to any kind of a mishpacha. For Rosh Elisa Isha, ein nosnin lo, achi vada mihu me'esa mishpacha hu. So that's what he's talking about. So he says, you have the mishpacha, the shita that says you need a mishpacha becheses kashus that we reject. Then you have the shita that says that that if I have a mishpacha that is a mishpacha yedua, that would be okay. But if a person just comes without any mishpacha altogether, so that's a problem. Then you have the last shita, you call it shita Rabbeinu Tam. A person doesn't have to be attached to any mishpacha altogether. So he says, I accept the intermediate shita. Person has a mishpacha. I don't understand this, but who doesn't have a mishpacha, right? I mean, people aren't born into the world without a mishpacha. It's a difficult sheet to copy in, right? So he said, but he says that this is what he accepts. The miyesha mishpacha in saw klal araya. Who has a mishpacha? So mishpacha sends to Solomon Schechter. Okay, but still, it's still a mishpacha. So not known in the Orthodox community, but we know it's a mishpacha. Somebody knows the mishpacha. So that's okay. Varaya in saw karakli ish bode. Now we have like Chaya Bodeid. So if you have an Ish Bodeid, that's the person who needs the Mishpacha. Shibabi Mechakim, the Lebanese man. That man needs a Mishpacha. We don't know any Mishpacha from this fellow. That fellow needs a Raya. That fellow needs a Raya. V'lo yadanu mishpacha. V'lechein ledina pshita sheish lizar shal yizkate v'ish she'ena yadu alanam v'chein v'ish she'ena yadu akimin derahabe merabosenu sovim kein. So that's a distinction that that he draws. And then he also is of the opinion that you should be machmir, that he holds that it's appropriate to be machmir, at least with respect to Kohanim, that if a person wants to marry into a family of Kohanim, so then he accepts that we have a more of a chumr in that case. But as I said, that particular approach really is only the Habamin and the Gemara of Rabbi Meir. But if you hold like the Chachamim, that we do allow marrying into a family of Kohanim, as long as there's no Eror. So I find that to be, that argument to be a little bit, or that approach to be problematic. And Rabbi Yosef also says, you look closely at the Sugya of the Gemara, it doesn't seem, if we're accepting a person's kashrus, it doesn't seem like there's a basis for distinguishing between marrying a Yisrael and marrying a Kohen. The last thing I'll mention is that to the extent that we say we only apply these chumras of like checking a person's yuxin, when, according to Rabbeinu Tam, when there's an error against the mishpacha, so one very interesting argument that I came across is from Rav Yitzchak Oshinsky, who's one of the major dayanim in Eretz Yisrael, from this psak din, from the Beis Din Aizuri Haifa, from this case of going back 10, 11 years ago. So he quoted from Mishkan Shiloh, Rav Shiloh Rafal. Shiloh Rafal was a top-notch, top-rate dayan in Eretz Yisrael. He was a descendant of some of the original Mizrahi leaders of Eretz Yisrael from the Rafal family. And Rav Shiloh Rafal, he was nifter at a very young age. He was nifter at a very young age, but he left behind a sefer called Mishkan Shiloh. And in that sefer, he made the following argument that Rav Yitzchak Oshinsky quotes. He said, it's only when there's no error on a mishpacha, when there is no kind of aspersion that was cast. But he says, whenever you have the Ole Russia, you have a built-in aspersion. There's a built-in error. Like, I guess that's sort of what Rav Yashiv was saying. You have the 30% intermarriage rate. Im kein benidon Ole Russia, nek shavos ha-mishpachos, kekara aleim error. Even though there's no actual era on this mishpacha, for this precise reason, so it's as if you have an era built in, and that's the reason why you have to have a greater level of scrutiny in terms of checking out people's Jewishness. So for all these reasons, we are circumspect nowadays that we don't just trust people who walk through the door. Everybody's Jewishness has to be examined, but obviously if they come from a well-known mishpacha in the community, so everyone would agree that there is a built-in presumption of kashrus based on all of the sugyas that we've discussed. We'll stop here.
Thank you. Is paid echad memon bisurin the same thing as chazak?